And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
This is Ray Shasho on BBS Radio, and welcome live from the House of Blues in Orlando, Florida. And I would like to welcome the legendary guitarist and founder of Uriah Heep, Mick Box, to the Ray Shasho Show.
Happy days. Glad to be here, mate.
Welcome.
Glad to be
welcome.
Here.
This is our second time we've
done. Is that live or alive?
Live or Memorex? It'll probably be on tomorrow. We'll probably do that because
cool,
we
got to
put it all together and everything. All right, you guys leave tomorrow for the Rock Legends Cruise, which is awesome. We were mentioning earlier, I hope you got your sunscreen. The Rock Legends Cruise is sold out every year. It's already sold out this year.
It sells out the minute it docks that year. It's sold out for the next year. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, well, it just shows you what a great thing is. It's, I don't know, 60,000 tons of rock music, isn't it?
Oh, it's Woodstock
rock,
on the high seas.
I'm rock fans, you know. So, yeah, you know, can't get any better, can it, really?
And Heap will be on the cruise as long as, you know, with so many great legends, including my buddy Mark Stein of Vanilla Fudge, who we just had on the show recently. Besides the North American tour that you are on right now, which we began, I think, the beginning of February sometime,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, about the 8th Feb, I think we flew out, yeah.
You guys are also going to be, you got the Sweden Rock Fest coming up, and that's got Iron Maiden, Ozzy, and Judas Priest on the on the show.
It's a good old rock bill, isn't it? Eh?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Incredible. You got, you'll be in Barcelona July 5th, 6th, and 7th. Your old buddies Kiss is going to be on the bill for that. Ozzy, Judas Priest, Dee Snider, to name a few.
Happy days.
And again, you got another festival coming up, the Seaside Fest in Switzerland, with another buddy of mine, Roger Hodgson of Supertramp.
Yeah,
that's August 25th.
And they're all good friends of mine, so that's
cool.
It's going to be a bit of a party.
It must be a party when you guys all get together and trade stories.
Oh, definitely, mate. Yeah.
And earlier this year, you played the Giants of Rock Fest. How was that?
That was great. We actually finished our album. We recorded our album with Jay Russell, the producer.
Right.
He's a fabulous guy. He produced, you know, Winery Dogs and all sorts of bands.
Right.
He's
right.
Marvelous Black Star Riders and stuff. And he's excellent. Europe. Great guy to work with. Then we did the album in 19 days.
In 19 days, really?
Yeah. Then we,
oh, wow.
Then we went straight to the Giants of Rock in Minehead in England.
Okay.
So it's the first show of the year, basically. And that was marvellous. We went down an excellent storm. It was packed to the rafters. There was 200 people outside, couldn't get in.
Really?
So it was a real good buzz going.
It's like the old
on,
days.
You know. And so it was a really good thing to do, you know. Then we went home for a couple of days, and then we flew out to Ottawa in Canada. We've been on the go since, mate. Yeah.
But Mick, I got to tell you, man, people that can't see you right now, you look marvelous.
Well, thanks very much.
I can't believe how good you look. You look like you're like 50 years old, man.
Oh, brilliant, mate. That's good news.
You've taken care of yourself, obviously.
Well, you know, if you want to last in the business and continue to do something you love,
right.
you got to be serious about it.
Yeah.
You know, and so we like a drink, we like to party, but
sure.
You know, there's a time to do it, a place to do it, and nobody wants to see you up there half-assed, do they?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So we go up there, we give 110%.
And unfortunately, you guys have had some guys that did not make it.
Yeah.
David.
Yeah, David and Gary. And
Gary and John Wetton as well.
And of course, Trevor Bolden.
That's right, Trevor.
Too, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I'm...
We'll miss all those guys.
So, really, I wake up every day, if my name's not on the bullet, I say, happy days, let's write a song, you know.
Well, you look terrific, man.
Thank you.
Now, the Pledge Music Campaign,
yes.
That's still going on, right? That's for the Living the Dream album.
Not at all. No. We're signed to a record company called Frontiers.
Oh, Frontier.
In
so the Pledge has nothing
to do with the album at all.
Okay.
No. We signed with them. I think it's about, it might be our third album with them. So we financed the album through the record company, of course.
Right.
And so we embraced the pledge thing because we wanted to give the fans some exciting possibilities that they never had before.
Right.
And it's one of those things, you know, if you want to join, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. You
exactly.
know? But we just thought we'd put it out there and see how it goes. And it's been very successful so far.
It has been.
People have been really embracing it and loving it. Yeah, it's great.
The album, the new album, has all new songs, I'm assuming.
The new album's got 10 new songs.
10 new songs.
Yeah.
Are there any cover tunes on there? No cover tunes at all.
No need.
and everything's ready? The album,
it's all recorded. It's being mixed right now in LA by Jerry Rustin, and we wait to hear some of those mixes come or be sent to us. Probably we'll get them at the end of the cruise, because on the cruise, the network is absolutely rubbish. You can't phone, you know, you're on the high seas.
Exactly.
You're not going to get network. So, and then they try and charge you something like $200 and to be online for a day, and it never works either. So
yeah, that's right.
It's all a waste of money. So we actually send a note home to everyone saying, we'll be out of, you know, communication for about 6-7 days. Yeah.
Well, you need it. You need the rest anyway. Yeah, it'll still be working, but
it's being mixed, and it'll be released in September.
In September.
Yeah.
What was it like working with Jay Rustin?
It was a dream come true. Yeah. He's got a good set of ears. He's a really nice, amenable guy. You know, he embraces your Heat family as much as we embraced him into the family. You know, and he's very he's got a lovely demeanour in the studio. It's not dictating, but you know, suddenly you find you're doing things. He's got a really nice way about doing things. You know,
good.
And he draws the performance out of each of us in a really cool way. So it's great. He was perfect, mate. Yeah,
awesome. Like I told you, I recently talked to Ken Hensley on my show. Another great guy. And I also talked to Chuck Negron, because I think you guys actually started with Three Dog Night, didn't you?
We did. That was our first American tour. Yeah, supporting Three Dog Night.
Yeah.
In Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis. How about that? I think, was it Steppenwolf on that bill as well?
No, that was just us two, I think.
Just you
and
Chuck.
They might have had Steppenwolf in various other areas.
Right.
Yeah, where they needed to strengthen the bill or whatever. But, you know, at the time, Three Dog Night were the biggest thing since sliced bread, weren't they? They were amazing, you know. So for us to be on support with them was truly great. And they actually introduced us to the complete rock style.
Yeah.
The rock lifestyle.
Oh, did they?
In 100%.
Yeah, poor Chuck, he went off the deep end for quite a long time.
Yeah, oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, he wrote a book about it. Yeah, actually, he's got three books about it.
Oh, really?
But, you know, he's been sober now for years.
We spent most of our time with Danny, which is
really with Danny, cool.
Yeah. It was a bit of a lad, yeah.
Yeah. In your interview last time we talked, the interview we had last time, you said some of the guys that influenced you, Django Reinhardt.
Yep.
Tal Farlow.
Yeah, Barney Kessel.
Yeah. People like that.
And Wes Montgomery.
Yep. And of course, guys like Buddy Holly, Eddie Cochran, The Shadows, Hank Marvin, and Jeff Beck, you said was a big influence.
Jeff Beck is still one of my favorite
songs
all time, yeah.
Yeah.
He keeps breaking down the boundaries, you know, and he goes through pop to rock to jazz and
he does.
To all sorts, you know, and he pulls it off so well, you know, like other people don't. I mean, it's one of these guitars. So many guitars today, you know, it's a million notes a second, isn't it? Whereas Jeff Beck can hit one note and keep you hanging there for hours, you know, and you get the hair stand up again.
Yeah,
you know,
it's true.
You tingle down your back. Wow, you know.
And he doesn't use a pick either.
No. He's got really strong hands from working on the hot rods.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, he's got really, really strong fingers and hands.
He works on hot rods,
so he can do all these things that we don't do because we don't work on hot rods.
Yeah. You don't have a car collection like everybody else? Brian Johnson from AC/DC?
I've never, ever been in the cars at all. It's no interest to me. If it gets what's made to be, I'm a happy man.
You know what I like about Heap? You know, you don't come across as just a heavy metal band. You guys are kind of eclectic in a way. You do.
Well, do you know what? We can't really have a title like that because, you know, there's probably about 10% of what we do is heavy metal. You know, because we float in and out of acoustic stuff, you know, with Lady Black and the Wizard.
A little progressive.
We've got the heavy stuff with the Gypsy, if you like.
Right.
And then we've got the...
Which you and David wrote.
The progressive stuff with The Magician's Birthday.
Right.
And all that stuff. So, yeah, we kind of float in and out. We've got a toe in quite a few genres, but they seem to ram us into heavy metal.
Exactly. That's where the first album came. Very heavy, very humble was... basically a little bit of a mixture.
And that was a complete mixture, because you know, the band before Uriah Heep was called Spice.
Spice, right.
And the idea we called it Spice because we didn't want to be tied down to any one genre of music.
Exactly.
We wanted, and there's many spices in the world, so that was the idea of, you know, thinking. Very hippie thinking. But and therefore, you know, you've got Gypsy, then you've got Come Away When It Was Acoustic, and then you've got the jazzy... jazzy things on there, bluesy things on there, all sorts of, you know, so it was kind of a bit of everything in there, you know, and I think that's good, that's healthy.
I think, I mean, I went nuts when Uriah Heep Live came out, and I think that, to me, I think that was the turnaround for the band, is when that was released.
Well, do you know, it was a real live album, you know, nowadays,
or
days shortly after us, they took it in the studio and spent 2 months perfecting it. What's that all about? You know, a live album's a live
album. It's a live album.
All the warts and all, you know.
Yeah.
And that was really a true live album. And it's a favourite of many, many other people. In fact, it inspired Kiss.
That's right.
To do their four solo albums as well. Yeah, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You had the program, the album, and it was, you know, opened up.
Yeah.
And a fall. That was
Paul Stanley.
Great pictures of you sliding on the stage.
They took a little bit, a leaf out of a book. Out of the Heap book, that is.
I saw you guys in 73 with, and you're going to remember the show in Baltimore. I think I mentioned this to you once before. It was you guys, Earth, Wind & Fire, and ZZ Top. You remember that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I've just been sent
the poster on Facebook.
Yeah.
I sent it to our managers and said, oh, look at this thing. Amazing, you know. But you know what? In those days, music was only good or bad.
That's right.
It wasn't pigeonholed.
Yeah.
You know, and what was great about that is that we turned on Earth, Wind & Fire's audience.
Yep.
Right? And they were turned on by our audience.
On, yeah.
And therefore, you broadened your audience.
That's right.
And you had those opportunities, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a very healthy time. And we had so many people support us, you know. I mean, a lot of rock bands, of course, with Kiss and Rush and ZZ Top and all sorts of people, you know.
But I'd love to go on the website because you have that section where you have all the old
stubs,
all the old photos,
that's cool.
The old tours, you got the
that's
old
cool.
tours,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
Everything, and who you.
And we even had Ike and Tina Turner, you know,
really?
And stuff, yeah, way back. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's amazing, you know, but as I say, it was just good music then, it wasn't pigeonholed at all, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how Bob Dylan got away with it. I'm not a big Dylan fan. The songwriting is good, but I don't know how he made it as far as a singer.
Well, he did.
I know he did.
He did, yeah, you know. But you know what? Sometimes in this business, it's not having a great voice, it's having a unique voice.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, you couldn't call Ozzy Osbourne a singer.
Right.
Per se.
But it's, you
but
said
he's recognisable in 2 seconds, and that's almost more important than being, you know, whereas you could say Dio was a great singer.
Right.
You know, a great vocalist. There's a difference between a singer and a vocalist, I think, you know. And, but you know, Ozzy's been so successful, and you know, it's marvelous, you know, what he's achieved.
I love
the musical world.
The show he just did with his with Jack around the world.
The
tour. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it.
No. I like Ozzy. He's cool.
Oh, he's great. I've had many a drink with him.
Many a drink with Ozzy.
Well, I've ended up on the
You're
floor.
You're still alive, huh?
Ended up on the floor, mate. Yeah.
How difficult was it to fire David Byron? I mean, he was one of my heroes as far as.
Well, he was my best friend, and that's how we started Uriah Heep, you know. But we got to a point. When you're dealing with someone with that destructive, I can't say, you know, the alcohol turned him into something different.
Something different, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, David was one of these flamboyant guys that he was a star 24/7.
Yeah.
There was I mean, if he walks into the Albert Hall or Madison Square Gardens, you know what exit he's arrived in.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if it was full, you know. He was that sort of guy who had that charisma. But, you know, with alcohol, it amplified it another 100%. And then he started losing sight of what it was all about, you know. And to be honest, it's always about the music. It all comes down to the music. Not what you wear, what you look,
true.
You know, all that stuff. It's about the music. And he kind of lost that a little bit. So on stage, there were some performances that were under par and to a point sometimes embarrassing. So...
Yeah, no choice.
So it got to a no choice situation, you know. I fought against it for a long, long while because he was a mate, and I'm very loyal to mates, you know, as I was to Lee. But I just feel that, you know, there was no way out.
Yeah,
no way out at all.
And Ozzy got kicked out once before he came back here too. So
they create that situation,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
where it becomes impossible.
And Ken has a great voice too, Ken Hensley. He always had a good voice.
He had a great voice in Heap because he had a really high voice.
Right.
I don't think he's got a great solo voice.
No.
It's a vehicle.
Right. He fit in Heap.
You know, it's a vehicle and it's very deep now and he doesn't do a lot of the high stuff. And,
right.
And all that, you know. But in the day with Heap, he sang a lot of high harmonies as I did.
Right.
And that was very strong.
Yeah.
That was his strong point.
Right. You said the core lineup during the heyday of Uriah Heep was incredible and unbeatable, and I agree with you 100%.
I think we had the confidence that, you know, if we were on stage, we owned it. It doesn't matter who was on before us or after us; it was ours.
Yeah.
And I think when you've got that confidence, it's like the band now, the chemistry we have.
Right.
Now, it has that sort of belief in ourselves, you know, and so. I stand by that comment because at the time we could,
You did a heck of a job to just keeping the legacy together of Uriah Heep with all the changes.
Well, it's something I've always believed in. I still have the same passion and energy for what we do, so that was my driving force to keep going.
Right. You got a great lineup right now, too.
Yeah, I was a firm believer that if you get the right musicians in with the right creative output and, you know, write the right songs, it's always going to be a winner.
I agree. Bronze Records, the collapse of Bronze Records, that hurt the band pretty much. You said that...
It hit a lot, it was very badly. Yeah, they took all their money with them, you know, when they went bankrupt. So,
Jerry was a smart guy, though. You said, in fact, he was... Richard Branson looked up to him. Is that right?
Yeah, well, Richard Branson looked up to him very much so, because Jerry, when in a day, in the publishing, management, agency, he had the whole nine yards, record company, a lot. You know, and... So yeah, he was very, very successful, but he lost sight of that success with going into ventures that didn't pay off.
Is that what happened?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
One of them was that he started an airline. It was a great idea, an airline in England.
Right.
That people could go to work, go to work and go up to the Luton Airport, I think it was.
Okay.
To one of his airplanes, go over to Switzerland, do a day's business,
come back
that night. Which was great, provided you get the business.
Yeah, that's true.
If they don't get the business and you've got five or six planes, all the costs involved with keeping a plane in a hangout in an airport is very expensive, and pilots, and it didn't work out. So it kind of started to all unfold. And along with that, then you started moving things around the business to support this, to support that, support that. And in the end, it just collapses. And that's what happened. So you collapse with all our... money and everything, you know.
That's a shame. He passed away, what, about 5 years ago?
Yeah,
something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, your inspiration was for Gypsy. You and David wrote that together.
It was a riff that I kicked off in a rehearsal room and everyone jumped on and thought this was good, you know. At the time, we were toying around with harmonies and trying to use harmonies as an instrument more as just following a sweet chorus line, as was in the late 60s.
Right.
And that was the perfect vehicle for that, because that's when that block harmony we do was spot on in that. So it's like another instrument. And then David and I, we always had a fascination with gypsies. Now, we have gypsies in England that go around and they just, it's like they have a dozen caravans. And they just go and they settle in the countryside, and that's how they're home. They settle in the park, they settle here. They're all thrown out because, you know, you're not allowed to, you know. And they leave the place litters and all that stuff. But the idea of the nomadic lifestyle of just travelling and not being tied to four walls, and you take your four walls with you, really appealed to me and David, you know. And that was part of our love of going on the road, you know. So that's why the gypsy thing came about.
Oh, that's a...
And then he made up that story about the girl and stuff, you know, father and
that. Awesome song.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Awesome song. That July Morning, of course, that's like your Stairway to Heaven, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. People relate to that like that,
Here's a question that I ask everyone, Mick, and I probably know it already because... If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to play or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
My God. Django Reinhardt.
Yeah.
Be nice to see.
I get that a lot.
How he got over the lack of fingers, because he lost his fingers, and then how he became so inept in his playing style, and to then be a leader in the jazz guitar world was just absolutely amazing. And there's hills to climb, but that was a big one.
Yeah.
And in those days as well, in the jazz clubs, it was you know, you have to think in those days, You didn't have people to set up guitars. You didn't have people to, you know, your tuners. You had to have a tuning fork, you know, right, and those, all that sort of stuff. So it was very basic. You know, you couldn't afford to go and get a million guitar strings. You didn't have sponsorship. You know, you had to make do.
Yep.
And he made do very well.
Yeah, he
with his disability and everything else, and it was just amazing. I mean, I remember when we first started out, the first thing we did was walk on stage and mm-hmm. Ken would give us an E and we'd just tune up to it before mm-hmm. we could begin.
Right.
Because no tuners,
yep.
all that stuff wasn't around, you know. No monitors.
That's right.
Know.
I love all the live album, the way you guys were tuning up.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Give us a minute.
it's real, yeah. You know, it's real, you know.
Yeah, it's real, exactly.
Yeah, it's real,
I miss that from concerts.
Yeah, but Jack Garner would be a good one for me because, you know, that whole Paris club scene. The only thing I wouldn't like about it, because he was a very big smoker, and I don't think I could be in the same room because I don't smoke. And
see, that's why you look so good, because you don't smoke.
It affects me, and I've never smoked in my life. So.
Yeah, good for you.
Mm.
Guitars. Anything new on the guitar scene? Are you buying anything new?
Carparelli's are my main guitars now. Electric guitars.
Right.
They're a guy called Mike Carparelli in Toronto.
In Toronto.
In Canada.
Okay.
Which is the last place we played. And he came down and heard it, and he loved it. You know, and he said it sounded marvelous. You know, and mm-hmm. really proud as a company owner that I'm using it and stuff. Because he sounded so good. So yeah, Carparelli's are my main guitar, and I've been having trouble with an acoustic. I had one made in the Philippines and stuff, and I had a few that I bought out with me. I can't quite get it for the Wizard because we're going to do the Wizard tonight.
And great.
We brought it in back into the set.
Right.
And I was just very uncomfortable with the sound that we're getting out. So I went to a shop in Toronto called the 12th Fret and went in there, and they had a lot of old stuff on the wall. But I was looking for a workhorse guitar, you know, because there's no use me taking out great guitars. Or you know, like old Black Beauties and things like that, because the airlines just trash them, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, Mike Carparelli, these guitars, they stand the test of the road. You know, I've taken this around the world for the last 10 years, and it's no problem at all. Please touch wood, it stays that way. Sorry about you.
Oh, that's okay.
That was me tapping the table.
That was Mick Box. The extra sound effect.
Touch wood. So I went in the shop and saw this little Taylor acoustic, and. I said to him, can you put some, you know, I think they had a different gauge string onto what I use, 12 to whatever it was. I said, put 12s to whatever on and detune it, because he's detuned a tone, and I played it like that. I went, yeah, wrap it up.
Yeah.
This is what I want. It's just a basic, solid guitar that does the job, you know, and if it gets stressed, we'll go and get another one. You know.
How many guitars do you have?
I can't count.
It's one of those. This guy's got 25.
I'm up in the 60s.
Sort of 60s, really, wow.
Yeah. But I don't know where they all are. I've got some in France because my wife's sister's got a house out in France, so I left one out, a beautiful ovation out there that I write on. And funny enough, when I was out there, I wrote a song that appears on the new album. I just kind of leave them everywhere with friends and things. So when I'm out there, I've got a guitar and I haven't got to take it with me, you know. Avoid the airline thing, but I've got a load in the lockup. I've got too many at home. I'm walking with a new guitar. My wife goes, no,
and I go, more.
I go, my answer is handbags, shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much. Touché.
Yeah, that's right. This is your thing, you know.
Yeah. But you know, I got loads. And a company, for instance, a company called Hofner out in Germany makes some great jazzers, and I was really interested in, and they were kind enough to send me over a few of them as well. So. That was really lovely, you know. So I've given quite a lot, you know.
You mainly play Gibson over the years, though. But
Gibson Les Paul is the my Black Beauty is my main.
Do you play Fender at all, or no?
I've got an old 56 Strat.
Oh, you do? 56?
Yeah, which is really lovely.
Very nice.
But I generally, you know, a Strat doesn't work with this band.
Right, right.
You know, I think that's all it is, you know. It needs the body of the Gibson.
Do you do any of your own, putting together equipment, you know, and building equipment and that kind of thing?
What do you mean?
Like amplifiers and...
I've got a sponsorship with a company in Germany called Engel.
Okay.
Who were just superb.
Right.
Best I've had. I was with Marshall for a while. For many years, for 40-odd years. And they've kind of changed their template of looking after artists, or not looking after artists, as the case may be.
Yeah.
And they've got into making fridges and headphones and, you know, rather than the important
exactly.
stuff. Right? You know.
Exactly.
So so I was very happy to get Engel, and they've been very supportive. And, you know, wherever I tour the world, they try and get me an amp and speakers, you know, supplied and stuff. So it's great. So, yeah, they're superb. So they're the amps I use, and I've got a couple of those combos right. at home, and that's all I need, really.
My first amp was a Vox. Remember, you used to put them together? You used to build
I've got a little Vox amp. Yeah, I've got a little Vox amp at home, which is nice, you know. It's actually one of the modelly ones, to be honest.
Oh.
Because sometimes when I'm writing, you need what's this like with the course? What's it like with the delay, isn't it? And you go on the amp, and there it is. Do you know what I mean? You don't want it refined, you
right.
just want to get the idea, you know.
Right.
So when I write very quickly like that, so that's a good amp to do that on too, you know. But Engel does everything I ever need to do.
That's awesome. Excellent. A little preview of tonight's show.
Yes.
A couple of songs that we can expect. I'm thinking Gypsy.
We start with our very first album, and
okay.
we end with our very last album.
Oh.
We don't
that
end
works,
with it, but
that works
that's,
good.
And it's a journey through all that. So we start with Gypsy.
Okay.
And then we move on through a couple there.
Right.
And then we deviate a bit, then we do a few, one off the new album, last album, Outsider, mm-hmm. then another one off the Outsider album later on, and interspersed with that is all pretty predominantly old stuff, you know, because, you know, people come to hear that.
Excellent. Yeah. Stealing on the set list?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, great.
You can't not do that.
Fantastic. Mick, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
We're looking forward
to seeing this.
That was his end, then.
Show.
Not mine.
It wasn't mine. That was me. I'm gonna read this little closing here. While I got
okay,
you,
mate,
but then,
cool.
could you do a promo for me
sure,
to the station?
Mate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, Mick, it's always a great pleasure to chat with you. Good luck on the new album, on the rest of the tour. Thank you for all the incredible music you've given us throughout the years, man.
I've been
a big Heap fan for way back since 1971,
well,
I guess.
Happy day. So when you get Living the Dream in September, you can
take
it to the next stage.
There you go. For more information on the band and concert dates, visit www.uriahheap.com. And on Facebook, www.facebook.com/UriahHeapOfficial. The pledge campaign is still alive. You can check it out at www.pledgemusic.com/UriahHeap. Very special thanks to Caitlin Ray and John Freeman of Freeman Promotions for setting up this interview with Mick Box at the House of Blues in Orlando today. And of course, Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly at our new time and date, bi-weekly Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Shasho Show, email us at raypublicityworksagency.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of the Galactic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. This is Ray Shasho saying goodbye from the House of Blues in Orlando. Have a great week. Looking forward to a great show from Uriah Heep.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio, Station 1.